This is London. This is London.
The Voice of Russia World Service.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing on.
This is the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland, with a relay transmission via Bonaire in the Netherlands Antilles, directed to New Zealand.
This is Radio Prague, Czechoslovakia.
Ici Radio Canada. This is Canada.
Bonjour à vous si vous nous rejoignez sur Radio France Internationale. Il est 5h à Paris.
This is Radio Ukraine International.
This is the English program of Radio Deutsche Welle, Germany's international broadcasting service.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette Macquarie and Keith Perrell.
Hello, and welcome to the March edition of the program. It's very nice to have you with us again. Coming up, more of the SWL Fest that was held a few weeks ago in Plymouth Meeting, USA. Keith, who attended one of the talks via Skype, was there to announce something positive about shortwave broadcasting.
Also, Paulette, since March the 11th, people around the world have been paying close attention to Japan since a magnitude 9.0 earthquake struck off the coast, followed by a devastating tsunami that wiped out many towns and villages in the country. We'll be talking about some of the radio during this time.
Well, Libya has also been in the news in the way of radio since February, but it has become more heated since March 17th when the UN Security Council passed a no-fly zone resolution to protect civilians.
We have this and much more, so stay tuned.
First, here's Keith with a look at some of the headlines from the world of radio.
In the last edition of the show, we talked about the cuts taking place at the BBC World Service after the British Foreign Office slashed their budget. Well, here is some good news. Well, I think it is. The BBC World Service is to receive a significant sum of money from the US government to help combat the blocking of TV and internet services in countries including Iran and China. That's according to the British newspaper The Guardian. In what the BBC said is the first deal of its kind, an agreement is expected to be signed later this month that will see the U.S. State Department money, understood to be a low six-figure sum, given to the World Service to invest in developing anti-jamming technology and software. The funding is also expected to be used to educate people in countries with state censorship in how to circumnavigate the blocking of internet and TV services. It is understood the U.S. government has decided the reach of the World Service is such that it makes investment worthwhile. My question is, where is the British government in all of this? I wonder. For the past few weeks, users of Google's email service in China have been experiencing difficulties in logging on to their email accounts. Google said any difficulty users in China may have had in the last few weeks accessing their email service was likely to be the result of government blocks. That was according to a Google spokeswoman. She said, "There is no issue on our side. We have checked extensively." The spokesperson said in an emailed statement, "This is a government blockage carefully designed to look like the problem is with Google. This is not the first time Google has accused China of interfering with its services." In January, Google said it had uncovered sophisticated China-based attacks on human rights activists using Gmail's service around the world. The months-long censorship dispute that Google had with the Chinese government was a diplomatic flashpoint in Sino-US relations in 2010. The Commando Solo, which is operated by the 193rd Special Operations Wing, has been transmitting a recorded message to Libya in English, French, and Arabic, warning Libyan ships and vessels to remain anchored and in harbor so as not to violate the United Nations Security Council Resolution 1973. This resolution is the establishment of a no-fly zone to protect civilians against Muammar Gaddafi's security forces. The message has been broadcast on 6877.0 single sideband. There have been reports that the signal was slightly jammed. But how reliable the jamming is? Well, we're not quite sure. Here's a clip of that message recorded March 20th.
Libyan ship or vessel, remain anchored. Do not leave port. The Gaddafi regime forces are violating a United Nations resolution ordering the end of hostilities in your country. If you attempt to leave port, You will be attacked and destroyed immediately. For your own safety, do not leave port.
Les vaisseaux libyens doivent rester en port. Le gouvernement de la Libye désobéit à une résolution.
Again, that frequency is 6877 kilohertz, single sideband. You might want to give it a try. Employees of the Egyptian Radio and TV Union protested in front of the union's headquarters in the Maspero building in Cairo. The 300 employees who had been demonstrating inside the building for 2 weeks demanded that Salam El Sharif, the head of the union, be sacked and for the head of several sections in the union to step down. The employees also demanded that the union revise the employees' salaries and promotions and provide health insurance. And finally, BBC Radio 1 DJ Chris Moyles has broken the Guinness World Record for the longest marathon radio DJ show. The record was broken at 8:30, March the 18th, that's in UK time, as Moyles and his on-air partner Dave Vitti, a.k.a. Comedy Dave, passed the 51.5-hour mark. The pair started their show early Wednesday morning and also broke Simon Mayo's record for the longest Radio 1 show on Thursday evening. Listeners have donated £2.4 million to their Comic Relief effort. Comic Relief is a charity which was founded in the United Kingdom in 1988 by the comedy scriptwriters Richard Curtis and Alexander Mendes in response to the famine in Ethiopia. The highlight of the Comic Relief's appeal is Red Nose Day, a biennial telethon held in March. Comic Relief is one of the two high-profile telethons held in Britain, the other being the Children in Need, which is held annually in November. Let's now take a listen to a clip of when they passed the 51.5-hour mark.
Look at little Alice, look. Can I cry now?
Yeah,
you can cry. So there you go. Hey, stop clapping. Stop clapping. I thought it was on tape. Me and Andy and Dave went for a curry the other night and then we went to Stringy's. Right, so...
And by the way, that's not true.
No.
Laura's listening.
Get a Chinese.
Well done, matey.
So we've done Radio 1's longest ever show, and now we've done Radio's longest music show. Do you like that?
Brilliant.
With a team, yeah. And that includes a whole host of people. There's way too many to mention, but thanks very much. And thanks for tuning in. We had no idea, by the way, that watching myself and Dave slowly going insane would be as popular as it was.
That was Chris Moyles, and again, they managed to raise £2.4 million for Comic Relief. I'm wondering if Paulette and I should try to break a record like that one of these days. I'm not really sure about that. Special thanks goes to Andy Sennett at Radio Netherlands Worldwide for the material used. You can check out the Media Network blog at Radio Netherlands at http://blogsrnw.nl/Media Network. Or you can find a link for them at our own website, www.pcjmedia.com. You're listening to Media Network Plus, a monthly supplement from PCJ Radio.
On the last edition of the program, Richard Cuff was on the show to talk about SWL Fest. Richard is one of the organizers of the festival, which for the first time in its 24-year history took place in Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania, just down the road from Culpsville, where it had been held for years. The festival has many forums on all aspects of radio, not just shortwave. This year, David Gorin's popular shortwave shindig took place on the evening of March 4th. Keith attended that event via Skype to make an announcement of some plans PCJ has in the works.
Greetings from the state of Pennsylvania and the 24th annual Winter Shortwave Listeners Festival. We're thrilled that you were able to join us. We got real excited with the success of a Skype presentation we did last year with... Robert Kipp, mm-hmm. of course, with Radio St. Helena. And then we heard from Joe Buck today, who actually took the QE2 trip last year that stopped at Radio St. Helena. We said, what the heck? We could conquer Germany via Skype. Let's see if we can conquer Taiwan. You know, 11 or 13 hours away. Take your pick. So at any rate, welcome to the fest. And all my things falling off. Don't you hate it when that happens?
I hate when my thing falls off, too. But that's a whole other story.
That would be correct here. But we're all family here. Anyway, Keith, the microphone, in a manner of speaking, is yours, and we can both see you and hear you.
Well, you know, actually, it's a lot of fun to be here, which means, actually, this is one step closer to actually being at the festival. I know that next year it's going to be the 25th anniversary.
Woo-hoo!
So hopefully next year, keeping my fingers crossed, I'll be able to be there in person.
That'd be great.
That'll be a lot of fun. One of the reasons why I wanted to really come here today, you know, in the past few festivals, when we had Rich on just last week and also last year, usually around this time, there's always bad news when it comes to international broadcasting. We heard, you know, Radio Slovakia stopped, Radio Sweden stopped. There's massive cuts that are going to be happening at the BBC World Service. The Voice of America has announced that there's cuts that are proposed to them, cutting not just transmissions, but whole services, like the Chinese section. And for the past few years, I have had this idea in my head, and the ideas that I get in my head, they sort of stick around for a long time, sort of like with bringing back Happy Station. The idea goes back to 1992.
Yeah, we stick around here for a long time as well. Like
right. And when Tom and I first discussed this in 1992, the idea always stuck with me. And then we did a one-time special that turned into a new show once every 2 weeks, which then turned into one show every week, which then turned into two different shows every week for specific areas. And now there's a third one, because I also do the Spanish version, La Estación de la Alegría.
So
we have three that are going out. And, well, to cut right to the chase, and I thought this would be actually, around this time would have been the perfect time to do it, but with the two big cuts that we've just heard about, BBC and VOA, an idea had been in my head going back to 2004, 2005, and that was to create a whole new international service. People will say that, you're crazy, Keith, why would you ever do it? Well, you know, the more people I talk to, we realize that, you know what, we can probably do it a lot more economically than let's say any of the large publicly funded broadcasters, and we could do it. So we made the announcement February 21st, and the to-be launch date will be announced later, because we're now still putting together the business proposal, coming up with a budget plan for a two-year period. We have some ideas with programming, but I don't want to give too much information because there's still a lot of stuff in the works. But basically, it will be targeting the regions of Latin America, Eastern Europe, and Asia Pacific. We will have Farsi, which will be targeted towards the Middle East, Mandarin targeted towards China, Spanish targeted towards Latin America, Ukrainian and Russian targeted towards Eastern Europe, and then English to all the other regions. And just before we sent out the press release, a name of somebody that many of you know, Jeff White, owner of WRMI, I called him up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, which that's my 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It was 2 o'clock in the morning for him. Yeah, and we ended up talking for 1 hour, thinking about ideas and how we can put it together. And we've more or less figured out that we could do it with language services like this, including content and paying people to be able to provide content. We can probably do it for about 15% of the cost that it would for any other international broadcaster.
Okay.
Because we don't have the certain overheads that we don't have. We don't have our own relay stations. It's a matter of renting time on different relay stations. And nowadays, with the cuts that have been happening, a number of relay stations have lowered their price because they want to get people on board.
Yeah. As long as you're paying for the cost of the electricity, they're pretty much happy. Anything you pay towards the fixed cost is gravy then to them.
Exactly. And it was funny because we sent the press release out on March 21st. And about 72 hours after it was sent out, I got four emails from four different relay stations sending me business proposals with propagation maps, technical data, and everything. And I'm like, oh, well, it seems that these people probably are willing to negotiate the prices that they already have, which they are. So Jeff White right now, over the next little while is putting together how much it would cost technically to do. I'm myself and Paulette McQuarrie, who does one of our shows, we're working out, how much it would cost, let's say to have a small staff and to pay people on a freelance basis. And then when we put that together, then we'll come out with more information, but it definitely is doable.
Yes, the announcement was made official, and we'll have more details in the coming months. At Shortwave Shindig, Keith also talked about what shortwave is like in his part of the world. Unlike Europe or North America, shortwave in many parts of the Asia-Pacific still has a big following, as it is in many cases the only way to get news and information. As we've pointed out before, we have seen many cuts to shortwave take place recently. But who is to blame? Declining audiences, new technology, or cuts? Or that many of the managers of stations these days just have no idea of the potential of what shortwave can do.
There was something else, actually, that I wanted to mention about, because, a lot of people, let's say, that listen to shortwave or are involved in it, there's been a lot of doom and gloom and stuff like that. Personally, for myself, here in Taiwan, now Taiwan, like Japan, is probably the most wired nation in the world. Mm-hmm. People listen to content on their iPhones, their iPads, on computers, on their smartphones, and every other device you can imagine. I still listen to shortwave on a regular basis, only because, number one, I have a lot of content that I can listen to here. If I turn my shortwave radio on right now, which is in the other room, Radio Australia booms in for about 6 hours, as well as other broadcasters as well.
You got people salivating here, Keith.
Well, it's funny because when I listen to shortwave here in Asia, it reminds me of what it was like listening to shortwave when I was very young, growing up in Montreal, Canada. You turn the shortwave on, you can hear Radio Moscow everywhere, BBC, VOA, etc., etc. That's pretty much the same here, plus a lot more. So, for example, like in the evenings, I'm a big fan of the Voice of America. The VOA have a number of frequencies in English and Chinese, and the VOA also have a medium wave frequency, which comes from Guam. And really, at 10 o'clock in the evening local time, that channel is booming in. And the same with other international broadcasters as well. So when I hear the story that nobody listens to shortwave, I think it boils down to the people that are managing the stations. And Richard, if you could indulge me, could I tell a funny little anecdote?
Sure.
About this? I lived in China for 8.5 years. And when I was in China, for half the time I was working for China Radio International. The other half time I was doing some freelance stuff. But when I was in China, on a number of occasions, I was contacted by international broadcasters who would send managers to China, and I was asked to show them around and meet them and be nice to them and all stuff like that. And there was one meeting in particular that I remember, and it's something that I still laugh about today. In 2004, I was contacted by an international broadcaster. I'm not going to mention any names. The only thing is I will say they're north of the border. I think you know who it is. Anyway, I was contacted by these people in Toronto, and they said, look, somebody from Toronto and Montreal are going to China. Some managers, can you show them around? I was, yeah, sure, no problem. So they arrived, and they arrived in the morning, and we couldn't meet the first day because they had to meet some Chinese government officials. It's like, okay, we'll meet the next day and I'll show you around and stuff like that. And I did. And it was the most extraordinary thing because the first day, if anybody was, if any of you were there and were watching us, there was five of them, including one of the announcers from this particular section. She's actually very nice, and I have no problem with her, but the managers, that's a whole other story. The look on my face was like this, and I'll try to give you an impression of what I was like. I was like... Okay. Staring at them because of the stuff that they were saying. They came to China to do a fact-finding tour to find out how many people listen on shortwave in Chinese. Well, I said to them, where are you going to be going? And they said, oh, we're here in Beijing for about 4 days, and then we're heading off to Shanghai, and then we go back to Canada. And I went, huh? I said, okay. I mean, Beijing and Shanghai, that would be like going to New York City and say, oh, who listens to Deutsche Welle on shortwave in New York City? I mean, you know, it's a city. Not many people listen to, or if anybody, listens to shortwave in cities.
Well, David Gorin put his hand up, so there's one.
Okay, there's one. But David is a special case, right?
Certainly is.
And I said to them, I said, wait a second. You want to find out who listens on shortwave. Shouldn't you be going to Heilongjiang province? Shouldn't you be going to Liaoning, Shenzhen, Xinjiang, Tibet, etc.? And I named off some other provinces. And all they said is, oh, no, we don't have the time. And I thought to myself, okay, this is great. And they told me that they want to expand their online content. Now, in the 8 years that I was in China, I can tell you, then, and it still is now, the website for this broadcaster in north of the border, their website is blocked in China.
Okay. No surprise.
And I thought, okay, they want to expand in that content, and they don't want to go to these areas. And the whole thing was just a little bit, you know, peculiar to me. And I got a friend of mine, a source within the corporation, to send to me unofficially the report that they submitted when they returned. And you know what? I knew it. From reading it, I can tell that they made up their mind before coming to China. But, you know, the corporation, the CBC in Canada, and other stations and other organizations within it, they have a certain budget that they have to spend before March 31st. And I think they just saw it as a vacation more than anything. And, you know, with these decisions, this is not the first time that I've seen this. When the BBC came to China in 2006, and I met the head of what department was it? The English Service to Asia, and there was somebody from the Chinese section. When I was talking to them, I saw that they pretty much had made up their mind before coming there. And they only went to Beijing, Shanghai, and Shenzhen. I mean, that is the most silly thing that I've ever seen, because if you want to find out in China who listens to shortwave, you need to get out of the cities. Now, the broadcasters will say, yeah, but our signal is jammed. Well, yes, that's true, but the jamming is only effective within a certain radius. In Beijing, when I was living in Beijing, yes, I turned on my shortwave radio, I heard jamming everywhere. The joke in Beijing is that, you know, there's so many signals being bombarded towards Beijing from jammers that if you put a chicken in the middle of the street, it'll cook, you know?
There you go.
But if I got on my motorcycle and headed 30 kilometers outside Beijing, there was no problem. Yeah, some frequencies still had a problem, but there was no problem. So in Beijing, just like with the Soviet Union, they would target the jamming specifically in the big centers. Now, today, Saturday, here in Asia, it's a big day in China right now because it's the annual National People's Congress, which is when all the party officials throughout China gather in Beijing. And this morning, when I turned on my shortwave receiver, because the meeting only began about an hour ago, there's a lot more jamming because all these officials are in Beijing. But the Chinese are kind of ludicrous because they're jamming an audience, first of all, that is not going to listen anyway on shortwave. But in the outlying areas, people still listen. And there's been some organizations that have done research in China to find out how many people listen. But how the research is done is a little bit, it's in no way accurate. I don't know how many of you were aware of the big earthquake that happened in China in 2008 in Sichuan. I don't know how many of you heard about that. Big earthquake, thousands of people died. I went up to Sichuan and I spent a couple of days ago putting some stories together. And there were no hotels. We actually had I was staying with a journalist from National Public Radio, and we actually pitched a tent because that was the only place that we can find a stay. And during the course of the day, we had people that came up to us and said, "Oh, do you have any way to get information?" We said, "Well, we have a shortwave radio. Do you listen?" And they said, "Oh yeah, we listen, but we have no electricity." Do you listen on a regular basis? Said, "Oh yeah, we listen to the BBC Chinese and VOA Chinese." And then as soon as we started talking, all of a sudden, some local officials from the area, because there were a lot of officials, they all wanted to get their pictures taken and get sound bites. They figured out we were talking to these people. We're talking about international broadcasting. They came right by, introduced themselves. All of a sudden, the people that we were just talking to who said that they listened to international radio all of a sudden said, "Oh, no, we don't listen to international broadcasting because we have enough content on from national radio."
Yep.
So what happens when groups go to China to do research on it? Quite often they're accompanied by these same officials. You know, so people are not going to be exactly forthcoming to say, "Oh, yes, I listen to the BBC World Service because China National Radio 1 is garbage." And, you know, it is. It's complete gobbledygook. But it's this is the audience. This, you know, it's like, for example, in East Germany, if you went to East Germany during the Cold War and went up to anybody in East Berlin and said, "Oh, do you listen to Radio Liberty?" Probably at home where there's nobody listening, or make they have an idea that nobody's listening, they'll say yes. But in the street, if there's some other officials around or somebody that could be a secret police, they're going to say, "Oh, no, I don't listen because we have our own good media here." You know, and these decisions that are being made now by some of these large public broadcasters are based on this kind of information. It completely astonishes me. It completely astonishes me.
It's interesting. They look almost for a capital city solution, and they design their solutions to be optimized for listeners in capital cities. You know, much like the BBC puts on an FM relay in Nairobi or Kampala, and then they ignore the countryside, even though a large part of the prospective audience are away from the cities.
Right. I mean, you know, the thing is, look, in China, there's a lot of websites that are blocked. The BBC Chinese service is now just blocked, the VOA Chinese service as well. But people in cities who know basic computer stuff know that they can go through a proxy server and listen to the programs, and that's fine. But in the countryside, where I can tell you, if I take, for example, Shanxi province, which is north of Beijing, this province has a population of around 15 to 18 million people. There is one computer for every 2,000 people. And that one computer for every 2,000 people can't be guaranteed. Number one, electricity is a problem, and the internet is a problem. And in many of the provincial areas in China, where that's where the vast majority of the Chinese population live, a lot of internet cafes, what they've done in the last few years is they've limited their internet cafe computers to only access websites in China. And proxy servers are also blocked off. So then guess what? People can access it. And in China, you know, finding a shortwave radio, a company that many of you are familiar with, Texan, is a huge manufacturer. They don't manufacture just 1,000 radios. They manufacture them in the millions. And Texan have a warehouse of radios, of even new designs that they haven't even come out with because they're waiting to finish off the ones that they already have. And they're producing. To find a shortwave radio in China is extremely easy in any of the large electronics markets. Now, in other places in China, you can find shortwave radios, and they move them Everybody's familiar with Walmart. Walmart recently opened a few years ago in Beijing. At Walmart in Beijing, Shanghai, and their other three or four locations, you can find shortwave radios in their electronics section. And people buy them. Because in China, even domestic broadcasters use shortwave to reach specific areas. For example, in Tibet, China Radio International, you may or may not know, also has a domestic service. To reach the audience in Tibet, the CRI domestic service was broadcasting on shortwave because it was easier to reach the audience in Tibet on shortwave than it was on AM and FM because of the terrain. And there's other areas in China like that as well. So, you know, this whole notion that people don't listen, well, unless somebody can go in independently without government officials by their side, people are not going to be forthcoming. The estimated audience size, I would estimate in China, this is from a former director of the BBC World Service. He said that in China alone, they have at least 15 to 20 million. Radio Deutsche Welle in 2007, I think it was 2007, 2008, they did a survey and they discovered that 10% of their listening audience in China listened off shortwave. Now, 10% in the United States, the United Kingdom is not much. But when you have 10% of 1.3 billion people, hello, that's a big number.
During the question and answer period, Keith was asked to give his thoughts on some of the proposed cuts at the Voice of America, in particular, cuts to Chinese language broadcasts from their schedule. Also, about programming on the new PCJ service. The first voice you'll hear is that of Dan Robinson, the White House correspondent for the Voice of America.
Dan Robinson, I'm with VOA at the White House. One of the arguments that the Board of Governors made at the town hall meeting, which is now on YouTube, I don't know if you've seen that, with the China branch, to remain relevant, VOA had to make these cuts and shift over to Radio Free Asia. And the relevancy is the issue that many of us are wondering about, because they see it as completely new media internet-based. So I heard what you just said. What do you think of that whole philosophy that basically shortwave is part of the irrelevant past?
As far as I'm concerned, and I'll apologize now before saying it, but that's a load of shit. it's crap. It's absolute garbage.
And room's applauding, Keith. The room's applauding.
Okay, you know what? Yes, I believe in investing in new technology. You need to invest in new technology if you want to stay relevant and you want to have people that would not, say, listen on shortwave. And I'm all for the new technology, and I love the new technology because it's a lot easier. But at the same time, the problem is people hear shortwave. They hear the word shortwave. What do they think? A technology from 100 years ago from a guy from Italy by the name of Guglielmo Marconi who created the spark. Oh, that's old technology. That's garbage. But, you know, I can tell you this, and I'm damn well sure of it. If shortwave had been invented, let's say, in the last 5 years, every country would be jumping on top of it thinking, guess what? We have a technology now. We can go through borders. We don't have the gatekeeper effect, like Bob Zanotti says, you know, the gatekeeper effect of the internet. If a country doesn't like you, they pull the plug. People would be going crazy about it. And I think the problem is, like I said, shortwave still has a lot of life. Shortwave these days sounds better than it has in the last 40 years. The receivers are a lot cheaper. The receivers sound great. You can just punch in the frequency and off you go. But unfortunately, the bureaucrats just see, oh, new technology, new. We've got to catch up. But they don't see the potential. That's the problem. The idea of switching over everything over to RFA, you know what? I look at it this way. If the United States really is not interested anymore in capturing the hearts and souls of people in China, and when I mean the people in China, I don't mean Beijing, Shanghai, Shenzhen, and some of the other major economic zones. I'm talking about the other 90% of the population or 85% of the population. Then you know what? Okay, pull the plug. But you know what? Don't come back later and say, oh, you know, we don't have a little voice in China because we destroyed everything. Which, you know, it's completely ignorant. Radio Free Asia is a good service, and I listen to them, but they are in no way, I wouldn't even put them as at par with the VOA Chinese service. I recently was told by somebody, and I don't remember the name right now, but the VOA Chinese service, if you take the BBC Chinese service, Radio Free Asia Chinese service, the VOA Chinese service is huge compared to even these two broadcasters combined. And you know what? Unfortunately, unless some of these people at the Board of Governors, unless they go to China, spend not a week on holiday or 2 weeks, go there for 3 months, 4 months, go to the countryside, go to where people are listening, then I bet you anything they would probably change their mind. They also have to get informed about shortwave. As I just said, shortwave today sounds much better than it did 25 years ago when it's engineered right. The technology is there. Internet still has a lot of problems because you know what? China can easily say, and China is capable of doing this. They could actually turn off the internet websites for radio. Okay, Radio Free Asia is blocked in China, but they could fix it so that even with a proxy server, you can't get through. So guess what? What is the point of even having an internet service for China? What is the point?
Anybody else? Questions for Keith while we got him live here? Yes, George.
And I'll make sure that I don't close yours down, but you've done this very interesting discussion we're all hearing this evening. You've done a lot of talk about your technology and the audience size and so forth, but you mentioned that you're going to have an extensive English service, but you haven't said anything about your programming. Do you know what's going to be broadcast on that?
You mean the programming in English?
Yes.
Yes, I can give you a little bit of information right now. How each of the transmissions will be structured to each of the areas, they will be done in two-hour blocks. So let's take, say, Latin America as an example. The first hour would be a program in English, followed then by a program in Spanish. Now, some of the program content that we already have, if I give you an example, one show that does very well for us with our partner stations is a show called Nash Holos, which is produced by a woman by the name of Paulette McQuarrie. It's a Ukrainian cultural show, but it's a little bit more than that. It's a little bit wacky. Other shows that would probably be there and we would probably expand on it would be Media Network Plus that we do as a monthly feature. Happy Station, of course, would be there. The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. And we're looking, and I'm already discussing with some other producers in other countries about co-producing material that would be targeted specifically for that audience. The programs, like I said, it's not going to be a news service because the other stations can do that much better than we can. But we're going to have, let's say for Africa, the programs would be mainly educational programs. They could be educational programs on HIV AIDS prevention. They could be English teaching programs, but not English teaching like, hello, today we say hello. Not that kind of thing. But programs, let's say, that would be spoken a lot slower. Yeah, so that's sort of an idea. We're, like I said, we still have the ideas. They're still on paper. We'll make the stuff more known public when we have a little bit more idea in a couple of weeks. Like I said, there's good content out there, and I think, I mean, it was really funny when the show that we started in was it December or November? November. No, October. It was October when we brought back Media Network, but Media Network Plus as a supplement. Many of you may know Media Network from when it was on Radio Netherlands with Jonathan Marks. Jonathan has graciously given me his complete archive of Media Network shows going back to 1980, which we've been uploading on the website. And we decided to create a monthly supplement. But to do it maybe a little bit differently than how Media Network is done right now. So that's quite exciting, and it's doing quite well. So that show will be back when we expand the service. We'll be there probably as a weekly service. If I would be doing it myself like I am now with Paulette, I don't know. It has to do with time. You know, there's only so many hours in the day. And Happy Station takes up a fair amount of my time during the week. So to do another show on a weekly basis, I don't know. We have a jazz show that we started doing a few weeks ago called Jazz for the Asking that we distribute to radio stations in Indonesia, Japan, Kenya, where else? The United Kingdom, one station, one station in Cuba, Venezuela, and New Zealand. And that jazz show if you listen to it, I mean, you can tell that I was influenced by, let's say, Willis Conover at the VOA because of the style that we presented. Now, the show is doing well in Indonesia because I do it in that, you know, the Willis Conover style. Hello, you know. So that would be there as well. So yeah, we have a lot of stuff, but like I said, we're still putting this stuff together, and we're going to make another announcement in a few weeks from now, more about content and programming. So it's just staying tuned, as they say.
Stay tuned, they say. Very yeah. good.
Okay.
Take care.
Thank you.
If you'd like to hear the full session Keith did at David Gorin's Shortwave Shindig, you'll be able to find it at the website for Media Network Plus, and that is www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus. And, of course, Media Network Plus is all one word.
This is Media Network Plus.
Since March the 11th, people around the world have been paying close attention to the 9.0 earthquake that struck off the coast of Japan and the situation at the Fukushima nuclear power plant that workers have been trying to get under control to prevent a nuclear meltdown, which could be a major disaster. The plant suffered damage not from the earthquake, but from the massive tsunami that swept away cities, towns, and villages along the coast of Japan right after the earthquake. Since then, many international broadcasters have been offering extensive coverage of the disaster, most notably Radio Japan.
Our news coverage this hour focuses entirely on the catastrophic earthquake in Japan. The program has been expanded to 29 minutes from the regular 10 minutes. In Friday's major earthquake and tsunamis, more than 1,300...
BBC World Service and Voice of America have also been extending their coverage of events in Japan. But one of the best sources, aside from Radio Japan, is Radio Australia, a powerhouse in the Asia-Pacific. Radio Australia's daily current affairs program, Connect Asia, has been reporting extensively on Japan.
On Radio Australia, this is Connect Asia.
Hello and welcome to Connect Asia. I'm Sonia Heidemann. It's Monday, the 14th of March, and we go straight to Japan, where Prime Minister Naoto Kan says the country is facing its worst crisis since the end of the Second World War.
Radio Australia has also reinforced its reach to help the government pass information to Australians in the region. Broadcasts normally targeted to Papua New Guinea and Southeast Asia have been redirected to Japan. Now, these transmissions are only targeted to this region, but depending on time of day and propagation conditions, you might have luck in picking them up.
That's right, Paulette. So here goes. This is what you can try. From midnight to 5 hours UTC on 21725 kilohertz. From 07 to 13 hours UTC, 11945 kilohertz. From 07 to 09 UTC on 9710 kilohertz. From 11 to 14 hours UTC on 9560 kilohertz. From 14 to 18 hours UTC on two frequencies, 5995 and 6080 kilohertz. From 23 to 07 UTC on 13690 kilohertz. And finally, from 2330 to 0700 hours UTC on 11750 kilohertz. You'll be able to find these frequencies on the blog for Media Network Plus, which we'll give out later, along with the link to frequencies and stations that you may also want to try. Just a few days after the earthquake and tsunami in Japan, the government announced rolling blackouts in the country because of the damage to the electric infrastructure. Radio Japan's Yamato Relay is operating and was not damaged, but they have reduced power by 15% to 20%. As of the recording of this program, I was informed that the power at the site has returned to normal. Staying in Japan for a moment, on a lighter note, a while ago, one of our listeners in the United States, Thomas J. Passage, sent along a very unique QSL card. Now, what does this QSL card do? Well, if you looks normal, everything looks normal, the information's on one side, but if you take it and you put it on your turntable, the QSL card will talk to you. Yes, it'll talk to you. Well, back in the early 1960s, Radio Japan issued these special QSL cards that you can get your information on one side and play it on your turntable and hear about the programming at Radio Japan. We now bring it to you.
This is Radio Japan with its studios in Tokyo. Radio Japan is on the air 29 hours daily, and its programs are being broadcast in 18 languages to the various parts of the world. Our daily program brings you news and commentaries of national and international importance, talks about Japan and her people, interviews and on-the-spot relays, music and entertainment by top Japanese artists, as well as easy-to-learn Japanese language lessons. Programs like this, Classical Arts of Japan, an introduction to an aspect of kabuki.
And special thanks to Thomas for sending that along. Well, we've come to the end of the March edition of the program. If you'd like to get in touch with us, there are many ways to do so. But before we give that out, we'd like to say hello to the following listeners. Boris Shridov in Montreal, Canada. Jürg Gruber in the United Kingdom. Sally Hampton, also in the United Kingdom. Russ Peterson in Australia. Jorge Santos in Mexico. And Heinz Mueller in Germany.
Now, the ways you can get in touch with us, well, there's actually quite a few. One of the ways you can get in touch with us is via Facebook. That's right, PCJ Media have a Facebook fan page. All you have to do if you're on Facebook is just do a search for PCJ Media, click on join the group, and that's all you need to do, and you can keep abreast of all the latest things going on.
And if you'd like transcripts of our show, you can visit the Media Network Plus blog, and you can find them at... Now, here's a long one. It's http://medianetworkplus.wordpress.com. And so that's Media Network Plus, all one word, and WordPress, all one word. So once again, http://medianetworkplus.wordpress.com. It's still a work in progress, so do come back often. And many thanks to Viktor Sergeyev in Ukraine for volunteering to do the transcriptions for us. And you can also reach us by email, and that address is pcjmedia@gmail.com. Also, please visit our website, and that is www.pcjmedia.com.
And for those who don't have computers, you can also get in touch with us via snail mail. Our address is PCJ Media, care of Media Network Plus, 8th floor, number 47, that's 47, Lane, L-A-N-E, 31 Lane 31, San Min Road, S-A-N like Norman, M like Mother, I like Ivan, N like Norman Road, Banqiao, B-A-N like Norman, C-I-A-O, Taipei, Taiwan, and the postal code is 22070. That's 22070. And I know that you probably didn't have time to write that down, but if you do want to contact us the old-fashioned way, you can find the address at our website, which Paulette gave out just a moment ago. So on behalf of me, Keith Parent in Taipei, Taiwan.
And me, Paulette Macquarie in Vancouver, Canada.
We hope to see you all again very soon.
Bye for now.
And best 73s.
Hi, this is Bob Zanotti. Do you miss Swiss Radio International? If so, I invite you to visit my website, SwitzerlandInSound.com. Colorful and informative radio features about Switzerland, its destinations, interesting people, politics, culture, and even the two Bobs, SwitzerlandInSound.com, where English language radio from Switzerland lives on.
We would very much appreciate your comments and questions about our programming here at PCJ Radio. You can contact us via email at pcjradio@gmail.com. Once again, that's pcjmedia@gmail.com. We also invite you to visit our website, www.pcjmedia.com, and listen to all our programs. You can either download them from the website directly or subscribe to our programs in iTunes at www.pcjmedia.com. And while you're at our website, do take part in the Happy Station Show Friendship Sponsorship Program. There are three levels: silver for $1, gold for $5, and platinum for $10. The selection is yours. This is PCJ Radio.